When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
All right, Josh, so the first part of our winter tour is over. Whew. That was fun, huh?
A lot of fun.
But we are going back out this week and next to Atlanta. Well, we're not going anywhere.
We're going down the road.
10 minutes from my house.
Sure.
Atlanta, Birmingham, we would still love to see you, and you can still get great seats.
Yeah, and this is a brand new show. Unless you were in San Francisco, San Diego, Austin, or Dallas, you ain't seen the show.
True.
And it is bringing down the house all over the country.
That's right.
Eventually, probably all over the world.
Yes, and you can get tickets. Just go to SYSKlive.com. It's our Squarespace-powered site.
Yep.
And they were powering our tour, and they're powering me on a daily basis.
It's true.
So we will see you guys very soon.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Joshua M. Clark. There's Charles W. Wayne Chuckers, Chuck Tran, Briant.
Chuck Tran, I remember that.
And then, that one never even made sense.
No. Who said that?
Me.
Yeah, I don't get it.
It doesn't mean anything. Oh. That's why it never made sense, you
gotcha.
Know? And then there's Jerry. Jer's Jerome Rowland.
Jer Tran.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh Tran.
Yeah, the Trans.
I'm excited to record this and then leave because I just quickly on my phone saw that Billy Joel did a doo-wop performance in the commercial break of a talk show and the video is up.
Oh, yeah?
So I got things to do.
Okay, well, let's go. Personalized medicine, Chuck.
Uh-huh.
So let's take it back. Let's take it way back.
Okay.
Let's talk about medicine in general, right?
Are we way back machining it or no?
No.
All right.
So there's this idea that to best understand how to treat a person, you should understand Hippocrates said, it's far more important to know what person the disease has than what disease the person has.
Boy, that is smart for back then.
It is.
You know?
And I think that this was the original idea behind medicine, that we can understand a disease, but when you apply it to a person, it's going to be different than when you apply it to another person.
Sure.
And that is the heart of personalized medicine, is that understanding. Unfortunately, for many hundreds of years, well, actually for a shorter time than that, but in Western medicine, the idea has been that if it works for most people, it'll probably work for you.
Or that's good enough for us.
Yeah. It's called a trial and error approach, and that should scare you to death.
Well, I get it, because until the Human Genome Project, we didn't have a lot of choices as a society other than to do our best for the majority, you know?
Well, yeah.
Like, that changed everything.
It did, but even before that, that was, what, 2000, 2001? Something like that? The Human Genome Project?
Yeah, I mean, before that, there were some precursors to personalized medicine, like, let's look at family histories and stuff like that.
Yeah, but even, like, that's not that old.
No,
it wasn't until World War II that people started noticing, you know, different people have different reactions to different kinds of medicine.
Yeah.
There's actually an anti-malarial drug that was given to troops in World War II, American troops. And if you're an African-American, there is a high likelihood that you might develop anemia after you were given this anti-malarial drug. But that didn't show among white troops. And doctors thought, what's behind this? And they went and looked and saw that, genetically speaking, African Americans were less likely to have a gene active that produces a protective enzyme that keeps you from developing anemia when you're given this particular anti-malarial drug. And that, in the middle of the 20th century, was the first time we really started in the Western medicine tradition thinking that, no, people have different reactions to different types of treatments and can have different experiences with different types of disease.
Did they do something about it in that case?
I don't know.
I was curious. Depends on the time period in this country, shamefully, that might have said, like, yeah, but who cares?
Yeah. Was the same time the Tuskegee... The Tuskegee experiments were going on. We were also infecting people in Guatemala with syphilis.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Crazy stuff. So you mentioned Hippocrates. More than 2,000 years ago, he was pretty advanced for thinking that Xerxes needs bleeding, but Zeus does not.
Right.
Zeus never needs a bleeding, by the way.
No. He just throws a lightning bolt at the problem.
Exactly. But he was way ahead of his time to be thinking that way back then. Some other pioneers since then, I think we talked about these two, Ruben Ottenberg and Ludwig Hechtun.
Nice job.
I don't know. That was not good.
Hechtun.
In 1907, and I think in our blood episode, we might have talked about this.
That was such a good episode.
It was a really good one, I think. They were the first ones to say, you know what? People have different blood types as it works. So that's why people keep dying we're putting this blood into someone that doesn't have the same blood.
So that was Landsteiner who came up with the idea that we had different blood types. These two were who first started to match people. Like, well, let's match these people.
Gotcha.
That's a pretty good first example of personalizing medicine.
On the most basic level.
Right.
Like, let's not kill people with blood.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And then, like I said, family histories and such, they finally started saying, hey, you know what? Maybe we'll look at your father and your mother and your grandparents.
Right.
Because if they have this disease, you might have it as well. But everything changed when the Human Genome Project came along. And, all of a sudden we found out we could learn a lot more about our predisposition for certain diseases.
Yeah. Because if you think about it, our reactions to different diseases, and also the same medicines that treat different diseases, can be traced down to the genetic level, to the molecular level, to whether a gene is turned off and expressing a certain kind of protein or enzyme, or whether our genes are going to allow for a tumor that expresses a certain kind of protein that can be tracked.
Yeah.
If you conceivably can look at a person's genome, sequence the whole thing, analyze it, and then look at what genes are turned on or off, what proteins are being expressed, that kind of thing, then you, if you also know that a certain kind of drug attracts a certain kind of tumor that's associated with that type of genome or genetic sequence, then you can put patient and drug together under its ideal form.
Dude, we should stop and just walk away. That's a mic drop statement. I don't think we need anything else.
Okay.
Can I go watch Billy Joel sing doo-wop? All right. So if you think you go to the doctor and you get personalized medicine, in a sense, you sort of are. But what we're talking about is what Josh has said, which is your own individual biology being the most overriding factor in how you are treated.
Right.
Your biology, not just,
you're a human being.
Yeah.
This works on human beings and horses.
Right. And your mom had cancer and your grandma had cancer, so you might have cancer. No, we're talking about looking inside of you to find out what your likelihood to get these things are. And like you said, matching you with the best treatment plan.
Right. One of those courses of study, there's a lot of different things that really kind of fall under personalized medicine.
Sure.
But one of those subfields is called pharmacogenetics, right?
Yes.
And that is, again, if you can take a person's genome and then, analyze it, you can say, well, I see the sequence right here would react very well to this particular drug. That's pharmacogenetics, matching the drug to the person, right?
Yeah, which is the opposite of, hey, it works for 8 out of 10 people, and if you're just one of those 20% than TS.
TS. And that, seriously, that is the basis of Western medicine as it stands right now. It's a trial and error approach.
Yep.
And they don't usually stop at TS.
No, of course not.
They just say like, oh, you survived that round of drugs, but
well,
it didn't work.
Let's try something else.
Sure. Let's try something else. Maybe this other one that doesn't work for that 80%, but tends to work for that 20% might work for you. And then it just goes on and on and on until they finally hit upon that drug. Hopefully that doesn't work. I say hopefully because within that trial and error period, a lot of people die.
Sure.
Sometimes that first trial results in a fatal error. And those are called ADEs or adverse drug events.
Yeah.
There's 770,000 people in the U.S. alone that either die or are injured by an ADE every year in the U.S. alone. Almost a million people.
Wow.
770,000 people every year. You give that person a drug and they might die.
Right.
And one of the goals of pharmacogenetics is to avoid ADEs so that you can say before you give anybody a drug.
Like this won't kill you.
Yes, exactly. This won't kill you. We know that because we've scanned your genome.
Right.
We're not guessing here. We know you genetically will not die from this drug.
Yeah, I think we should caveat here when we say things like guessing and like, I don't want to paint the medical industry as, you know, just throwing darts with a blindfold. They did the best job they could, I think, to treat massive amounts of people in the most efficient way possible.
Sure.
But things are getting better now because of the human biome or the human genome and what we've learned about it. Like when I look about the future of medicine, it is like super rosy.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like 100 years from now, it's going to be amazing what we're going to be doing.
Maybe like 30 even.
Oh, yeah.
Like we're right there on the cusp right now where we went through a fairly dark age as far as medicine goes, where we were taking shots in the dark, figuring things out as we went along. And now we are right there at the age where we're about to just take off like a rocket and really understand health and wellness and treatment of disease.
All right. Well, I feel like we're on the cusp of a message break as well.
I think you're right. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island. It becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
So, Chuck, I was talking about pharmacogenetics, right?
Yeah.
There's actually some examples of pharmacogenetics already taking place. This isn't necessarily in the future. Like, this is already starting.
Yes.
I think it started in the 90s, right?
Yeah, and we'll get to this later. One of the big reasons that things are cooking now cooking with gas, as my dad used to say, is because the massive drop in cost for mapping your genome.
Yeah.
Like, massive. In fact, I'll go ahead and tease you here. In the first time it was done to James Watson in 2007.
That was 2007. Not even the human genome. That was 2001.
Yeah, 2007 was the first time they mapped the person.
Right.
In full. Cost $1 million. Now you can get it done. A good one, not a full, you know, you can't map out the entire genome for this amount of money.
No, I think you can. You can sequence it.
You can sequence it for...
That's the caveat.
Less than $200.
And pretty soon it's going to be about 50. And then from what I saw in that, I think that was like a Business Insider article. There was a dude who gave this really interesting lecture. He very strongly asserted that they were pretty confident by 2020, thanks to economies of scale, genome sequencing will cost about a penny.
Yeah, they won't cost a penny. Like, you won't pay a penny. I guarantee you that.
No, but it'll be...
But it might be like $50, and someone will be making a $49.99 profit.
No, I think what he was saying was if you take all of the genomes that are sequenced in a year, ultimately that's what it will have cost. It's about a penny each, right?
Yeah.
But it's going to pop up in different ways than what you have now. Like, this is it's a pretty common thought that... You will pee into your toilet, and your toilet will have a genome sequencer attached to it.
Uh-huh.
And when you pee, your urine will be analyzed for any changes from that morning or the night before or anything like that, so that your baseline health is monitored on a several times a day basis, right?
If my toilet starts telling me to cut down on my drinking, then I'm going to start peeing outside.
I imagine that you can probably set it to kind of take it easy on this area, you know, that kind of thing.
And when I say start peeing outside, I mean full time. I pee outside almost every night off of my deck.
Right. Sometimes you even stand up.
Yeah. That's Raymond McCauley, by the way. He is the biotechnology and bioinformatics chair at Singularity University.
Yeah.
What's their mascot?
The fighting Kurzweil.
So he's a smart guy, and he's the one that is saying that this is just getting cheaper and cheaper.
Right.
And when you look at the graph, in 2007, it took a nosedive in price.
Yeah, it did. He compared it to Moore's Law, where Moore's Law is like the amount of computing power doubles every 18 months or something like that.
Yeah.
24 months. I can't remember. And it was pointed out that genome sequencing was actually moving at a rate of 5 to 10 times the rate of Moore's Law.
That's awesome.
That is awesome as far as genome sequencing is concerned. The problem is computing power is still following Moore's Law.
Yeah.
And here's the big problem. This is why we're not all getting our genome sequenced right now.
Yeah.
Because it might be very cheap to sequence a human genome. It's still very expensive because it requires a lot of computing power to analyze that genome.
Yeah, that's the main stumbling block, is you can't sequence your genome, stick it in a machine, and have it say, you'll get cancer.
Yet.
That's the future.
But not too far off.
No, that's like Gattaca.
Yeah, but this guy, McCauley, was saying probably in about 10 years they'll have machines like that.
Yeah, which is what we need. That's the main stumbling block right now, is there's so much data that computers can't even keep up.
So right now you could conceivably get a decent genome sequenced and analyzed for like $15,000, which is not, I mean, that's not out of the realm of, it's not out of the reach of everybody.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a billionaire for that. Right.
Yeah.
The big change will come when all of us get our genome sequenced, basically for free. And the holy grail in the not too distant future is to not only have a genome sequencer and analyzer in your toilet, but also you'll be wearing like a wearable or have an implantable.
Yeah, like a Fitbit or something.
Yeah, or maybe something that's under the skin that is like Fitbit.
Yeah.
But that's analyzing everything. Including your hormone levels, things like that. So you're not only analyzing your pee, you're also analyzing your body on a moment-to-moment basis. And all this stuff is run through an app that you have on your phone that is tied in to your health records and other kinds of medical data that you control and you share with your healthcare provider rather than the opposite. That's another big change coming that we talked about in Will Computers Replace My Doctor episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That medical information about the person is going to be wrestled away from healthcare and healthcare providers and insurance companies and placed in the hands of the individual. And that's going to be a huge change that will probably come from this personalized medicine.
Exactly. One of the positive changes. Mm-hmm. All right. So there have been some early stories that have given us all hope for the future when it comes to looking at these biomarkers for potential of disease. And one of them, there was a drug called K-A-L-Y-D-E-C-O, Kalydeco?
I think so.
In 2012, to treat a rare form of cystic fibrosis, which is a deadly lung condition. And the FDA here in the U.S. approved this drug basically because they found out certain people have genetic markers, these biomarkers, that they wouldn't respond to other drugs treating cystic fibrosis. So they said, this is a new drug that will work for you. Success story.
Right.
Boom.
And this is the future of personalized medicine all over the place, right?
Yeah.
It covers about 4% of cystic fibrosis patients. So in the U.S., that's 1,200 people that this drug was targeted for.
That's awesome.
Right?
Because you would think, I'm just cynical, but you would think that's so few people that
right.
somebody would be like, oh, why bother?
I'll bet it costs a bunch of money
sure.
for the drug.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. And then secondly, it also kind of shows how personalized medicine shifts our understanding of disease too, right? The reason these people with cystic fibrosis didn't respond to regular medicine is because their cystic fibrosis was developed because their genes that regulated salt and water movement across the surface of their lungs
yeah.
were mutated and not functioning properly. So this specific drug that targets these 4% of cystic fibrosis patients goes in and messes with that gene. Well, if you do the other 96% of cystic fibrosis patients, their salt and water movement is just fine.
Yeah.
That's not why they have cystic fibrosis. So it changes your understanding of cystic fibrosis. It's not like you have cystic fibrosis. This is why you have it. This is how your body is showing that you have cystic fibrosis. It's,
yeah.
You have cystic fibrosis and you can have all these, you can have it under these different mechanisms.
Right.
That's what personalized medicine is changing too. It's changing our understanding of disease itself.
Yeah.
Same with cancer, right?
Sure.
Certain tumors express certain proteins. And although, yes, you have an out of control growth that makes a cancer, it really doesn't bear that much of a resemblance to this other kind of cancer.
Right.
And the more we dig into how people respond differently to cancer treatments and how they can host different kinds of tumors is changing our understanding of cancer. And a lot of people are like, cancer's too big of an umbrella. These are really almost different diseases.
Yeah, and I think the Macaulay guy said the hope one day is to stop cancer before it even starts at
yeah.
such a small molecular level with these advanced, I guess.
Like a blood test.
Yeah, basically the blood test will be so advanced mm-hmm. that let's say, you know, you're going to develop cancer in 5 years. Like, we can tell that already, so let's just stop it now before there's a tumor.
Yeah.
You know?
Or before it gets big enough that it's a problem.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. If you have type 1 diabetes, I think it is, good news, there is a new system. It's basically an artificial pancreas device, and they are wearable, and the clinical developed by UVA and Harvard. Go Cavaliers and Crimson? The Crimson Smarties? That's Harvard, right?
They're not the Crimson Tide, too, are they?
No, not the Tide. They're just
Crimson?
They're just the Crimson.
Okay.
I think
you guys left a part off there, Harvard.
Well, they do have a mascot, I think, like John Harvard, but it's not like...
It's just a square of crimson.
I don't know. I think so. Weird. Maybe they're above it. They don't need a...
Crimson Knights? Crimson Knights.
No.
Is that Rutgers?
Yeah, that's Scarlet Knights. Anyway, UVA and Harvard developed this thing together, and it starts clinical trials in like the next month or two. And for 6 months, 240 people are going to wear this thing, this artificial pancreas.
This is so cool.
To tell your body exactly when you need the optimal level of insulin in your body at all times.
Oh, well, it introduces that optimal level.
Oh, does it?
Uh-huh.
How so?
So it's like it's monitoring your blood glucose level.
Yeah.
And you know, if you have diabetes, you have to inject insulin.
Yeah.
This stuff, say, is connected through a port in your chest.
Oh, I don't think this one particularly is. This is just a wearable monitor.
Oh, it is? Okay.
But I think eventually they're going to have what you're talking about.
Sure. I guess I'm just getting ahead of myself.
That's actually regulates, not monitors, in the future, I think, is what you're talking about.
Or injects like an optimal dose of...
Yeah, regulating your glucose.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do it.
Right.
I think this is just a wearable monitor.
So you could just like press and say, okay, how much insulin do I need right now? And it tells you the exact like milligrams.
I guess so.
But you still have to, like a dope, go and inject it yourself, right?
I think so. I don't see how it could be wearable on your arm and also be attached to your body, like the insides of your body.
Through like an IV.
Yeah, I don't think that's what this is.
All right.
Sounds like there's two different things.
But it's still monitoring exactly what your blood glucose level is.
Absolutely.
And it's your blood glucose level, ergo it's personalized medicine.
That's right. if you have tinnitus, like our buddy Aaron Cooper.
Aaron Cooper.
He probably didn't hear that. All he heard was a ringing.
He just heard...
They're working on customizable devices that adjust the audio signal that's unique to your own ear. In other words... Hey, just put this hearing aid in there that may or may not work for you.
Right. From what I understand, it actually, noise-canceling headphones?
Yeah, I don't like those.
It kind of works like those. I guess it figures out what pitch you're hearing that tinnitus at, and it just gets rid of it.
Yeah.
I think that's neat.
I do, too.
And then, Chuck, there's another early example of a big win. There's something called Herceptin. And in 1998, the FDA said, yes, go ahead with this. They figured out that this particular drug worked for a specific group of people whose tumors expressed a specific protein. And it was a breast cancer tumor-targeting drug. But, it wasn't like, oh, you have breast cancer? Here, try Herceptin. It'll work for you.
Right.
We believe that you have this kind of tumor because it's expressing this kind of protein. So Herceptin is going to treat this.
Hooray for Herceptin.
Yeah. It's pretty neat stuff.
Well, let's take another break and we'll get back and finish up with some of the obstacles in the future.
All right. Game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
All right, so this all sounds rosy. But there are some obstacles. We already talked about one. The previous biggest one was cost.
Yeah.
This article itself is way out of date because it said $17,000 a person, and now it's already at like $200.
I think that might be, though, with analysis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that's what they're saying.
Okay. Oh, yeah, follow up on the data.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so now it's down to $15,000.
Roughly.
So it's up by $2,000.
Right. So it was written a week ago.
All right. That makes sense. But the cost of the genome was a previous hurdle. Now that's coming down. Another hurdle is that we mentioned was just processing the data. And then another hurdle is just overstating the impact of this, of the findings.
Right.
Just because, and it's a slippery slope, just because you are susceptible to something doesn't mean you're going to get it.
No, and that's actually, there's something called the Jolie effect, the Angelina Jolie effect.
Oh, boy, I've got 8,000 jokes.
Have you heard about that?
No.
So do you remember when she did genetic testing and found that she was, there was a likelihood that she would develop breast cancer?
Oh, I thought you were going to say pouty lips.
No, no.
Okay.
I think perhaps like her mother may have had breast cancer. I'm not sure. But she was convinced that there was a good chance she was going to get breast cancer. So she went ahead and had a double mastectomy without breast cancer. No tumors, no nothing. She just preventatively had mastectomies.
Angelina Jolie did?
Yeah. Yes. And it created what's called this Angelina Jolie effect.
I think
and
Christina Applegate did something like that too.
Well, she had breast cancer.
Oh, okay.
Angelina Jolie didn't have breast cancer.
Gotcha.
Believed that she would conceivably get breast cancer, so just had her breasts removed.
And then had implants.
Right.
Yeah.
And it created what's called this Angelina Jolie effect, which is this idea that the more we know about our bodies, the more focused on all the things that could conceivably go wrong.
Yeah.
Hypothetically could go wrong.
Yeah.
That we may take radical steps like prophylactic surgery, basically,
yeah,
you know, to prevent something that may or may not even happen.
Yeah.
And this is a big concern among bioethicists about this kind of understanding that will come from personalized medicine is, are we going to all become obsessed with our health?
Right. Well, I think people that already are, this will just be the next step of that.
Yeah, but I could see it could bring more people into the fold. I'm sure there's a lot of people who don't think about their health just because they don't have that kind of awareness. But if it was in their face, like, hey, buddy, here's your genome. Look at this crazy stuff that could happen to you. You may start thinking about it even if you weren't predisposed to it before.
Right, but you would have to go get that done to begin with.
Well, that's another question, too. So right now, if getting your genome done costs $17,000, right? Should that be just the providence of the rich? Or is it a human right to know what your genome says? If anybody can know what their genome says, should everybody?
Yeah.
I predict that the answer will ultimately be yes to that,
that
it is a right, and the government will probably fund a program for every American to get their genome sequenced.
You think?
20 years.
Another big problem is the FDA is just overtaxed. You know, it's a rapidly moving field, and they just can't keep up at this point.
No.
Which, you know, because there are a lot of new things that come along, new drugs, new devices, that the FDA has to test.
Well, not just that, the understanding of it as well.
Sure.
Like, they used to have this open database from the Human Genome Project to where all of these anonymous subjects' genomes were just sitting out there for anybody to go and data mine, right?
Yeah.
And then somebody proved that you can actually you can de-anonymize these people because, again, this is their genome.
Yeah.
And figure out whose genome you're looking at specifically. And the FDA had to shut it down. But they shut it down after somebody proved that this could already be done. So they're having to react rather than being able to keep up with the changes in the field.
And that's one of the other huge slippery slopes in the future is, well, a couple of things. How insurance companies deal with this. Can they deny someone based on a biomarker? Right now there's legislation that has been signed into law that says no, you cannot.
Right.
It's called biological discrimination.
Which is profoundly insightful or foresightful.
Oh, yeah.
For the government.
Sure.
I'm really surprised by that one.
And you know what? Canada is the only G7 country that doesn't have this protection.
Really?
Biological discrimination.
Wow.
And it's a big deal. There's a lot of people that are going like, why are we the only one?
That's really surprising.
Like, we're Canada.
I predict Trudeau will change that.
Well, there's a big push too, for sure. And it's funny, when they voted in the, what was the act called?
Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act of 2008.
Right. It passed by a vote of 95 to nothing in the Senate and 414 to 1 in the House.
Who is the one?
It was Ron Paul, of all people.
Huh. I'd be interested to know what his thinking was there.
I've got it, because I thought the same thing. Here's his thinking, because it doesn't make sense that he's pretty obsessed with the government staying out of your biz.
Sure.
He said, uniform federal mandates are a clumsy and ineffective way to deal with problems such as employers. And one of the rubs is either you'll be denied insurance, or maybe you won't get hired for a job.
Right.
Or promoted if they know that you might, you know,
right,
kick the bucket soon.
That guy can't push a broom. He's got a defect on his G489 gene.
But it says right here in his experience that he can push a broom.
Genetics.
he said, uniform federal mandates are a clumsy and ineffective way to deal with problems such as employers making hiring decisions on the basis of a potential employee's genetic profile. Imposing federal mandates on private businesses merely raises the cost of doing business and thus reduces the overall employment opportunities for all citizens.
Huh.
Yeah, I see what he's saying, but I don't know. It's kind of surprised. Seems like something you'd want to protect.
Sure.
But it passed by the widest of margins, regardless.
Yeah, that might be a record.
No, I'm sure there's been unanimous ones.
I would like to know what those were.
Yeah.
You know, like honoring Girl Scouts on Patriot Day or something.
No, there was one person who was like, no.
No. That was Bernie Sanders.
I choked on a tag-along once. Never buying them again.
There's another obstacle, Chuck, and it is gathering the information. Like, to get this understanding of, you know, what kind of genes lead to certain kinds of diseases so that we can treat people on an individual basis when we stumble across that same genome in a person later, you have to have a big database of genes.
Yeah. So where do you get it?
23andMe. That's apparently where you go get it.
It sounds like Forever 21, like a mall store.
Yeah.
23andMe.
Yeah.
They are a company now, and the leading company, I think, for the personal genome test market. And how they're making their money now is not by selling these test kits,
which is $99, which supposedly they were selling at a loss.
Right. So they could eventually have this database that they could then sell to whoever, not whoever, but namely like pharma companies and people doing research.
So the 23andMe amassed a database of, I think, about 800,000 people, 600,000 people who took the 23andMe test and paid $99 for it, agreed to donate their DNA, their genome.
Yeah, to research.
To research, right? So 23andMe said, thanks a lot, guys. Now we have 600,000 individuals' genomes just sitting there waiting to be analyzed. And very recently, they closed a deal with a company called GeneTech. GeneTech paid 23andMe $60 million just to analyze 3,000 people with Parkinson's genomes.
That's why they were selling the kits at a loss.
Yes.
Because they knew the big payoff was in something else entirely.
Yeah. And they're from what I read in a MIT Technology Review article, the 23andMe, you shouldn't paint them, and I don't mean to paint them as nefarious or anything like that, but there's a guy named Charles Seif, who writes for Scientific American. In 2013, he called the idea of a private company amassing a private database of human genomes.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is like the stuff of science fiction movies.
For sure.
I couldn't decide whether or not it was bad or not. I think what people are most concerned about is like, well, what happens in the future? What if it becomes just like Facebook, where they have the rights to sell your personal information to whoever wants?
It's exactly what it is. So
yeah.
Facebook data mines your behavior, that, and you get to use their application for free. 23andMe analyzed your DNA and sent you some stuff back for $99, and they're data mining your genes.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as Facebook.
Yeah.
It's just instead of behavior, they're analyzing genes. They're data mining or amassing a database of it for sale.
But right now they're saying, we're selling it to researchers who are out to make medicines to make people better.
Yeah, and that's You can't really argue with that.
Right.
It's just the potential for it. You can understand how somebody could make it, it could be made very uncomfortable by that.
Yeah, the evil overlord son of the current head of 23andMe is the one who will do it.
Well, the founder.
The guy that's like 12 now.
The founder used to be married to Sergey Brin of Google.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think they since split up. But she still is the founder and I believe the person who's running 23andMe.
Wow.
Hopefully she subscribes to the Don't Be Evil thing, too.
Seriously.
If you want to know more about personalized medicine, we should probably revisit this every 6 months, I think, Chuck.
Yeah.
You can type those words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. You should also check out these awesome episodes. Your limbs torn off, now what? Can your grandfather's diet shorten your own life?
How blood works?
Yeah, blood. That was a good one. And then, will computers replace my doctor?
Yeah.
If this episode floated your boat, you will love those too. And I said float your boat, which means it's time for listener mail.
That means it's almost time for Billy Joel Doo-Wop.
Yep.
I'm going to call this Satanic Panic Movies. Hey guys, my wife Jody and I just listened to the episode on Satanic Panic and we loved it and reminisced about our childhoods. We were both children of the 80s, and she remembers all the daytime talk shows about Satanic Panic. We both had no idea it was taken so seriously by so many people. For me, I always assumed that stuff was just legend, although there was a Devil's Drive street in my own town growing up that kept all us 10-year-olds spooked into our teenage years. And it was a rite of passage when you finally got your license to drive down that street.
Oh.
Mostly, I remember Satanism through movies and pop culture, though, given your penchant for cinema. Cinema Tangents, we were both expecting to hear more on that topic in this episode.
That was too serious.
Agreed. Here's my top 10 list of mainstream 80s Satanic Panic movies.
Nice.
Number 10, Dragnet.
Nice.
Number 9, The Golden Child. He said this one does not hold up well.
I'm surprised to hear that.
That it doesn't hold up well?
Yeah.
Number 8, Children of the Corn. 7, Witches of Eastwick. Eastwick. 6, every popular horror movie in the 80s, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween.
I take issue with that,
yeah,
man.
That's not satanic.
Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th is certainly not satanic.
Those are just creepy killer guys.
Yeah. Slasher flicks. Come on, dude.
Number 5, The Burbs.
Yeah.
Number 4, The Evil Dead series.
No.
Number 3, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Ritual Sacrifice. I'll give him that.
Yeah, I'm not satanic.
I think he's just broadened.
Oh, okay.
Number 2, Poltergeist.
No, not even close.
And number 1, I don't think he asked which ones you're going to say don't belong. Number 1, Young Sherlock Holmes. I love that movie, but I don't remember much about it.
Oh, yeah, there was a whole cabal.
Oh,
it was more like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
There was
like an ancient Egypt worshipping Victorian cult.
Okay.
That was cool. I saw it like in the last year or so.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I remember enjoying it when I was
great
a kid.
Movie.
Where'd that guy go?
No idea. I was wondering that myself.
Huh. Thanks for an amazingly delightful and consistently entertaining podcast, guys. We came out to your Boston show and absolutely loved it. Happy New Year. That is from Brian Gladstein of Framingham, Massachusetts.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you for half of that list you sent as well. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, send us a list that we may or may not trash. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard.
But Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.